Tonight, everybody gets to vent their spleen, me included. The lines will be, are always open, but tonight we're going to want to hear from you because tonight we're talking about culture wars, the hot ones and the cold ones, and we're splitting the hour up into two. We're starting off with Quebec and the wonderful anti-Anglo zealots that have reared their ugly heads again, and we're going to go into this issue both how, as it affects commerce, law, schooling, with perhaps the most courageous advocate on these issues, Brent Tyler. And the second half hour, we're going into the hot culture wars, the war of civilizations, with the widely anticipated Pamela Geller, Atlas Shrugs from New York. And before anybody gets into an uproar as to why I'm juxtaposing the two, no, of course, Quebec's Francophone extremists are not seeking to take over any hegemony over anybody, except, of course, everybody else over here. But I want everybody to understand something. The basic premise of any extremism, the basic premise of tribal nationalism, is that somehow they have a chosenness and that they are right over everybody else, and that some injustice was done to them that gives them a right to penalize everybody else. It's a mindset that is nothing but a reflection of a cultural self-doubt driven by a jealousy of other self-belief. And it is still, decades after the language laws, decades after the election of the first separatist government in Quebec, in full flight in this province. And it's wrong. Jim Duff asked me before the news, does it really make a difference if people like that English Montreal School Board president want to keep fighting? What's the point of fighting these laws? The point of fighting is that despite the Supreme Court decisions, we have a very politicized judiciary in this country, regardless of what everybody thinks about, oh, well, you know, we appoint our judges, we don't elect them. In council rooms apart, those decisions are made. We've got a monotonous, chattering class, salon liberal intelligentsia that controls so much of media in Toronto, where everybody's right to be wrong is lionized and celebrated, and anybody who asks for rights immediately gets a hearing. Well, it's wrong. There was no great native injustice done to a native people in its land, to the French Canadians. They came here as imperialists for beaver pelts for the King of France. The English followed 100 years later, killing them and killing the Aboriginal people that the French imperialists had killed before. Nobody's got that kind of moral supremacy to do what is continually being done for decades here. We've had quasi-linguistic peace. It's time for somebody to come in and say to Quebec, ça suffit. You know, you want to go, put a straight question. Do you want an independent nation? You get 50.1%. Go. But pay your national debt. Because je me souviens also means that the rest of Canada, which was supposed to be an experiment where we'd be able to overcome tribal nationalisms, remembers that in 1954, Maurice Duplessis won an election over Liberal Georges Lapam on one issue, provincial income tax that was supposed to be credited against any payments from Ottawa. No credits were ever done. Je me souviens. People remember. There's not going to be a forgiveness. There should not be a nice, cushy separation with shared passports, shared pensions, shared currency. But we cannot stop the battle for what is right. Because as long as there are even a few people to fight that battle will eventually be won. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, one person resolute, abiding by the truth, shall rally a majority. And we're going to speak to one of those few people right after this break, Brent Tyler, and I will go at this question, and we welcome your calls. The fanatics run to the barricades when there's the slightest indication of more English. It's pathetic, really. It's comical, because the French language is not threatening Quebec. Brent Tyler, you said it. You're right. What's their beef now?
Well, Daryl, you know, they don't need much of an excuse to find something to complain about.
You bet.
The latest thing, of course, was provoked by Esso's decision to, first of all, to try and change from Marché Express to On the Run, And then when the Société Jean-Baptiste and the cronies...
And the Mouvement Montréal Française, let's not forget them.
Well, it's actually the same people. Mario Beaulieu is one of the communications people at the Société Jean-Baptiste, and Mouvement Montréal Français is basically just a rejiggered version of the same people. But that was what provoked it all. The funny thing about it is that trademarks are protected by international treaty, and there's nothing that they can do in terms of legislative change to change the use of names like Best Buy and Future Shop and the rest of it. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to provoke a boycott. That's what they're calling for. Now, Beryl, I don't see them being able to succeed in this endeavor for the simple reason that I think Francophones cannot bother to get excited about this subject anymore. Now, there was a time back in December of 1988 when Bourassa was about to did invoke the notwithstanding clause where you could get 60,000 people on the streets of Montreal saying, ne touchez pas à la loi Sarr. Now, I don't think you could get 60. So the times have changed. You know, the days when Francophones couldn't get served by the fat lady Eaton's, well, I've got news for them, you know. The fat lady's gone, and so is Eaton. So times have changed. But you still have the same characters who get this reflex reaction, and they have to denounce what they see as rampant English. I mean, it's ridiculous.
But this is a code that politicians use when they have no other issues. They play on xenophobia. They play on the self-doubt of Quebecers because it's spread. It's not just about language. They've already beaten so many people down. Anglophone parents who even have a right to send their kids to English school, send them to French immersion. We see unilingual French catalogs. They're everywhere. Nobody complains. You know, Beaulieu said that the English compromised the French face of Montreal. Well, Beaulieu hasn't seen the statistics. Montreal Island is now 50.2% non-Francophone, non-Anglophone. It reminds me of what Yves Michaud said, that English was a scar and disfigurement on the face of Montreal. But it's gotten broader than that, hasn't it, Brent? Isn't this just the fertile ground for politicians and their friends in the media making hay of another issue? I mean, we saw this race poll that was publicized in Journal de Montréal with pictures of Hasidim and women in chadors, Muslim women in chadors. We heard ADQ leader Mario Dumont, who's again pandering to the xenophobia by saying we should limit accommodations now to the rights of minorities. Now, certainly we should limit political correctness, but he went much further than that. He went borderline. Isn't this just symptomatic of still a retrograde political culture that can't seem to find what it's for, only what it's against?
Well, certainly at the basis of it all, there's this sense of ethnocentric nationalism, the us and the them. That is at the basis of it. It's at the basis of secession. It's at the basis of this insecurity about language. That is at the base of it, Beryl. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I don't think that Quebecers generally are any more or less racist than, say, other Canadians. Except when it comes to these hot-button issues like language.
I wasn't making the point, Brent, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I wasn't making the point about racism. I was making the point that there is still an inherent self-doubt in this province, that it can't compete, that it's not as economically powerful as other jurisdictions. Even though Montreal has per capita more university graduates than Boston, it's our politicians that are feeding a self-doubt that isn't true because they're not letting Quebecers compete, but nobody's standing up and saying that.
Well, I agree with you, and you know that's certainly, I think you put your finger right on the problem. There's this sense of insecurity. Part of it is linguistic insecurity. You know, you hear some. I remember a number of years ago, Lise Payette had a movie out called Disparaître. Look, the French fact is not going to disappear in the province of Quebec. To pretend that the French language is vulnerable in the province of Quebec it's the big lie. You repeat it often enough and loud enough, and it becomes axiomatic. No one dares question it. When in fact,
Uncle Joe Stalin said it, the broad masses of the people will believe the big lie quicker than the small lie if it's repeated often enough.
Well, that's what's happened with the vulnerability of the French language. And it justifies, according to the framers of Bill 101, it justifies the measures that we're currently living with. You know, the idea that you can be prosecuted for having an English-only website when you're not catering to a single customer in Quebec. There isn't a country on the planet that legislates the language of websites the way we do here. Or the idea, another example, the idea that the French or the official national language has to be twice the size of all of the languages combined. But again, there's not another planet on the,
another country on the planet.
That does it. I mean,
no, it's the Lilliputians in control. Brent, I got to take a short commercial break, and after we come back, I want to ask you what it's been like, being a leader at the barricades, and where the hell are the rest of Montrealers? Has it been like 15 years ago, and everybody else forgot to fight already? Montreal, we want to hear from you. Where the hell are you? We'll be back. And Montreal, we're talking about the challenge to linguistic peace by those retrograde xenophobes that are reared their ugly heads again. I'm very, very proud to have Brent Tyler with us this half hour. He's been leader at the barricades in so many of these struggles, and he's a human rights lawyer because this is rights, and freedom is indivisible. But I want to hear from you out there. Why don't you just say no? Just say no. Don't worry about the money. Don't you have any self-respect or you think it's all in the past and he can't be beaten? You can fight City Hall. Chris Cargiones is showing it in the fight over renaming of Park Avenue, which frankly at heart is another cultural issue. This is a culture war, but it's more of a war about your own self-dignity. Why can't you just say no? Brent, does it ever make you feel despondent that you're out there? Yes, you've been the head of Alliance Quebec, but you're out there basically alone in the courts. And have you ever wondered, you know, as Nancy Reagan said about the war on drugs, why don't people just say no? You can't enforce a law that people say no to. Don't people get it?
Well, I think the it is frustrating at times, Beryl. Certainly it is. But you know, we have 77 pending cases now.
So you'll be busy for a few months. We're not going away anywhere.
Oh, no, well, this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to have to look at this. There's no question about that. You know, the way I like to look at it is there's this dichotomy in the English community, as there is in the French community, between the elites and the grassroots. You may recall an attitudinal survey done by the Missisquoi Institute back in 2002. The number one consideration for English-speaking people, regardless of their age, regardless of their income or any other demographic or related factor, the number one consideration was equal rights. So the sentiment is there. Then the question is, why don't people show it more often? And I think the reason why they don't is that they feel very let down by their political leaders and the media, in particular the Gazette, because the elites on the Anglo side have made this compromise, Beryl. It is better to keep the country together, and so we have to give up our rights for the sake of national unity.
Except, of course, they've been making that argument for 40 years, and every time they make the argument on language, every premier of Quebec, regardless of party, has asked for more power on immigration, on justice, you name it. They've gotten it, and the federal government, the federal consequence is becoming what Trudeau warned it would be, nothing more than ribbon cutting. So what are we keeping the country together for?
Well, that's right. When you feed ethnic centric nationalism, you just make it stronger.
But that's my point about the Anglophones and Allophones that don't like this law. They know they can no longer depend on their governments, that politicians run between the raindrops waiting for their pension checks. You've spoken to these groups. Don't they understand that what Gandhi called responsible agitation, and just saying no is certainly not irresponsible? They couldn't enforce idiotic laws like this.
Well, again, I have to go back to the elite grassroots dichotomy. My clients, Beryl, let me assure you, they have never accepted this law. They never will, and they'll take it as far as they need to go. And if they don't get any support from the community, they'll still do it. I mean, you know, they are highly motivated. We're very fortunate to have an outfit in Calgary called the Canadian Constitution Foundation, which is registered as a charity. And they will give anyone who wants to contribute to our cases a tax receipt for charitable purposes. There are ways of doing it. And it's like a winter campaign. It's difficult, but, you know, my people are going to continue, Beryl. Now, you know, the question that you raise, why isn't there more support from the broader community? I think the answer is fatigue. People are tired of this issue, unfortunately. And because unless they're targeted themselves, it doesn't concern them. They have other priorities, you know, mortgage, kids, and so forth. And I understand that. and so do my clients. But the fight is still there and will always be there. And hopefully there'll be a sensitization and people will be more aware that this is their fight as well.
Well, you know, as long as there remain advocates like Brent Tyler, the fight will be there. And I'm reminded of the words of an old spiritual that was sung in the civil rights movement. And this is a civil rights issue. The only thing we done wrong was staying in the wilderness too long. The only thing we done right was the day we begun to fight, really fight against the, you know, what Mark Twain called the swollen envy of pygmy minds that he called race prejudice and cultural prejudice. Brent Tyler, more power to you, and we'll have you on again real soon.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Brent. We'll be back. And before we get to our widely anticipated new Thursday night segment, A World at War with New York's Pamela Geller, we'll introduce in one moment. We're going to take some pressure off the lines. Hey, Montreal, Canada, here's a hint. We've got a slew of calls like right 30 seconds below the news break. Call in during the segments. We'll have time for you. But let's get some pressure off very quickly. Andrew, welcome.
Yes,
good evening.
Good evening, Merrill. I'll keep it short. You're running out of time. I guess, you know, you have a repression or you have influence. And the use of repression, the only thing that I think is good about it is they're going to weaken their economic potential, and the few Anglos who survive will be richer or more powerful than they were when we were more numerous.
You know, Andrew, it's not about wealth and power. I'll tell you what it's about. And this is a saying from ancient Rome. Brent mentioned how the elites are willing to give away so much to keep this country together. You can't give away justice. Law that is not just, and just being defined as the equity of just consideration. Gandhi said that kind of law is no law at all. So you know what was said in ancient Rome? Let justice prevail though the heavens fall. Let us keep on fighting for what is just against this these cultural barbarians, even if it costs the country. Because a country that rests on a foundation of lies and it's protected by a bodyguard of lies isn't worth keeping together. So let's fight for the right and continue. Andrew, thanks very much.
Good job.
Tonight's topic is culture wars, the cold ones in Canada, but the real hot ones in the world. And it's a hot one, and it's more than a culture war. It may have started out as a clash of civilizations, as Harvard Samuel Huntington put it, but it's grown a lot more than that. And it matters. Now, you listeners out there in Montreal and Canada, you Canadians, I know that our listeners do more than just watch the CBC. You watch what's going on in the world. But you want to know why the war against Islamofascism matters? It's in your papers today. Because Mohamed El-Masri, the head of the Canadian Islamic Congress, took exception with Canadian Foreign Minister Peter McKay's trip to Israel, where he snubbed Hamas. He also snubbed the Congress. This man has the nerve to criticize the Tory government of Stephen Harper that has restored a vision and a vigor to our foreign policy that hasn't been seen in years, when this man, Mohamed El-Masri, said not that long ago that every citizen of Israel is a legitimate victim for Islamic homicide bombers, not suicide bombers, homicide bombers, because it's a citizen army, therefore everybody's potentially a soldier. I don't know why this guy's still walking around with the freedom to even discuss anything, and he's threatening blackmail on our government. That's why this matters. As much as the Toronto 17 could have done damage to the body of this country, people like El-Masri do damage to the soul of this country. And that's why we got to wake up in Canada and understand that this war is our war, and not just because our boys are doing so much tough sledding in Afghanistan. And, you know, in covering so many issues in the public agenda, we lose sight of this central existential question of our time. It's a global war against terror and the Islamo-fascist ambitions that fuel it. So starting tonight and every Thursday night right after the 7:30 news break, we're going to be talking to Pamela Geller. Pamela Geller is former associate publisher of the New York Observer and founder of Atlas Shrugged. WWW, Atlas Shrugged, one word, Shrugs, atlasshrugs.com. And believe me, what you'll find there is straight talk, no pulled punches, and she will rock your world with straight talk on what's the real deal behind this world at war. Pamela Geller, you've been on before, but this is the first time we're doing this segment regularly, and welcome.
Hey, it's just you and me. I like that.
That's it's good. Just you and me, babe. So how do you like this little news about El-Masri? You like that?
Listen,
everybody's like, you know, these guys can't, you know what kills me? Is it the same in the States? These guys can't figure out Now, he's motioning to me. We've got to do a commercial and pay some bills. But I just want to think about this question. We'll come right back. These guys can't figure out why our government, a free democratic government, really kind of likes Israel, another free democratic government, and why there's no equivalency with the tin pot tyrants running the Arab Muslim world from the borders of Pakistan to the Moroccan Atlantic coast. I mean, is this a sick mindset or what? We're going to be right back with Pamela Geller right after this very short commercial. And we're starting with our first regular Thursday night segment with Pamela Geller of New York on The Real Deal on a World at War. Pamela is a former associate publisher of the New York Observer, founder of www.atlasshrugs.com. Pamela, sorry for that quick commercial break. I was asking you before the break, is this kind of, you know, lefty, touchy-feely, chattering class, sound liberal, everybody's right to be wrong? Is it as bad in the States as it is up here?
It's worse, but I gotta say something to Andrew, that caller that was right before I came on.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to say to him about the rich and the powerful.
Well, he's talking about Montreal's, Quebec's language laws.
It's a worldwide phenomenon, the demonization of the rich and powerful. It's a hallmark of the second rater, the resentment of another man's achievement, and I think I think it has to end. It creates jobs. It creates wealth. It's funny. I was in Walmart today. I got to tell you something about Walmart. You know, they can't open up in New York City. We can't have a Walmart because the lefties would.
Yeah, except that wasn't about economics, Pam. That was about Quebec's language laws and the fact that the elites, the English elites, won't fight for English rights anymore just to have peace. That's what he was talking about. This was on another issue.
Again, he brought up the rich and the powerful.
Well, because here it's...
canard, and I'm telling you that I was in Walmart today. I'm bringing up a point. Who shops in Walmart? If I tell you, it's all poor people, which allows them to buy things they could never afford. Plasma TVs they could never afford. All I'm trying to tell you is this demonization of the rich, it has to end. It is a tool of the left, and they're hurting their own. But if you want to get back, okay, well, let's talk about the turnaround in Baghdad. You want to talk about the turnaround in Baghdad?
Let's talk about the turnaround in Baghdad.
You know what it is? It's the hatred of the good for being good. It makes me sick. The hatred of the good for being good. It's a morally ill society. I mean, I'm sure you saw, even when you say that it's bad in America, it's horrible. And they control every megaphone, except you and me, Beryl, baby. They don't control you and me.
There are a few others, but, you know, we're few and far apart. But, you know, just between, we'll have to keep this conversation just between you and me.
Too far between. I agree, and that's why I love what you're doing. I want to say to all the bloggers that are listening and blog readers, because I know that I've brought a number of my people with me, and if you don't let me speak, they're going to come up there north and they're going to kick your ass.
I know that. They've already emailed me.
How funny, but what I'm saying is that I want a tip of the old hat for opening up to bloggers, because there's a wall of silence in the media towards the bloggers who really are on the cutting edge of real news these days. It's the tail wagging the dog. You see the news that's on the blogs. You'll see it on the radio and in the media a week later. And
oh, yeah, it filters out.
Whenever they have to do a story attribution, they always say the blogs. Like they're one massive miasma, one huge blob like Steve McQueen. You know the movie?
A massive miasma.
Meanwhile, we're all so individual. We're all so we're all pundits in our own right. We all have our own areas of what we consider to be expertise because we're so self-important. It's really kind of scary. But the point is that I just want to thank you on behalf of blogs that I hope this opens up an opportunity to a lot of other bloggers who are on the air but usually on like a blog talk radio kind of a situation as opposed to broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great thing that you're doing, but you're a cutting edge kind of a guy. Well, we like that about you, Beryl. You know, it's funny, guys. His last name, even though the readers... W-A-J-S, but it's Wise Man. Now, that's kind of cool.
You like
that's
that.
That's kind of cool. We love that. We totally love that. So back to Baghdad, okay? It's interesting. There is a turnaround in Baghdad. There's a very interesting piece for your readers who get their news on the net, NYSun, NewYorkSun.com. On the editorial pages, it's called Turnaround in Baghdad. Everybody should read it. There's a lot of good things that are happening in Baghdad. My fear, Beryl, is that we won't see the turnaround in the media. That's my fear. It's a war that's been totally decimated by the media. It's been driven by, I mean, look what happened in America.
Well, let me ask you, and I know you just came back from Washington. You may be going back for another part of the...
I hope I can get there.
Yeah, of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies Convention. The fact that the Iraqi Prime Minister says that he'll no longer protect Muqtada al-Sadr's Shiite militia... Does no longer protect mean the same as I'm going after and kick his ass and he should have died with the 7 bullets in him like 2 years ago?
Well, let's be honest. He should have died right away. I mean, you can't talk the talk that Bush talks. Huh, we're going to get him. Huh? And you can't talk the talk Bush talks and then put gloves on our soldiers, little white gloves.
Yep.
The rules of engagement.
The rules of engagement are miserable.
The rules of engagement is serve tea and crumpets for you, or wait until you fight upon. I mean,
show them you feel their pain.
Who do they think we're fighting? But let me tell you what this is all about. You ready, Bill?
Go ahead.
They try to complicate it for people, but I'm going to tell the people that are listening to your show, listen to me, ladies and gentlemen, whatever cloak, whatever costume it's wearing, it's the civilized man versus the barbarian. What side are you on? It is that simple. And as soon as they start to say, well, it's much more nuanced than that, trust me. Okay?
We get callers that say, well, you know, they went in there because of oil. I say, so what? I don't care if they went. I'm not looking for virgins. At least they went in.
Listen, we don't go in for oil enough. Let's stop the nonsense, okay? I mean, he was a monster. He was monster boy. 1.5 million people, they were raping, they were pillaging, they were stooping, they were doing anything they wanted to those people, living under the foot of the boot. You know, I was in an airport. It was funny because I was flying one of your airlines, Comair. And some guy was challenging me. He's probably listening now. I know you're listening. And we were discussing the war and, you know,
he's listening.
I bet you listening. And we were saying, you know, but it's not a nation. It's not a state. So this is the enemy. This is how the enemy is defined. But the bottom line is, and we were going back and forth, and it was all terribly interesting. But after he walked away to make his flight, there was a woman who was sitting there, and I hadn't really noticed. She had a lovely little boy with her. And it turns out she's Pakistani. And you know what she said to me? She said, I want to thank you. I can't believe that you would speak so loud that you're not afraid. Listen to this, that you're not afraid.
You're not afraid.
That's how bad it is. You're not afraid to speak. She goes, I grew up in Pakistan, and they were marrying off the girls in her class, 12, 13, 14 years old. Nobody, where are the feminazis, okay? Where are the feminists? What Bush did in Afghanistan, what Bush did in Iraq, nobody talks about the good.
Pamela Geller, I got to interrupt you for a second because you love the rich so much. I got to pay some bills because my operator is making all kinds of gesticulations at me. We're going to be right back after a short commercial with Pamela Geller, Atlas Shrugs, the real deal, folks. And we're with Pamela Geller, www.atlasshrugs.com. And this is going to be a regular Thursday night segment, The Real Deal on a World at War. Pamela, I interrupted you before. We had a short commercial break.
Listen, I have to talk slower. I've already been told by so many people that I'm talking too fast. I'd like to get as much information.
No, it was good. You've blown the lines. Now, you're gutsy, right? I know you're gutsy.
I think I'm reasonable, and I think
But you're gutsy. You're brave, right?
I think I'm. Yeah.
Okay. But since we've got the callers now divided into threes, pros, cons against both of us, and people in the middle, let me take a caller from the middle. How do you feel about that? Short caller from the middle.
I'd love one from the other side. Mamsie person who can't make it to the
Oh, he. Mamsie. This guy's not Namdi Bamby. I assure you.
Let's go.
Andy, let's go. Welcome. Good evening.
Okay. Good evening. First of all.
Be nice, Andy. There's a lady present.
Believe me, I'm going to be nice. But I'll prove her right and wrong at the same time.
By the way, Pamela, Andy always starts out with, I agree with you, but here's where you're wrong.
You know this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The thing is this. The United States.
Keep it short, Andy.
Yeah. The United States, I'm glad they got. If they went into Iraq, I'm glad they what they did. But they're so inept, so incompetent, because the generals who keep their mouth shut, they keep their mouth shut because they want to get...
Andy, put the question.
There's no question, just a comment because...
All right. Andy,
answer?
We're running against the
can
clock.
Can
thanks.
Yeah,
it's all yours.
Listen, Andy, baby, sweetie.
Yes.
America freed more people than any other nation in the history of mankind. It's not perfect for you? You don't think it's perfect? Let me tell you something. When you say the generals will keep their mouth shut, what do you think this is, Russia? Everybody talks there. We can't shut the...
No. Wait a minute. Some of the generals, they want to get into the army.
Andy, we really got the lines
Andy,
full. One comment.
Wait, I got to ask Andy one quick thing. Andy, one quick thing. Well, you guys can't fight the jihad in Montreal. You think it's going to be easy to fight it in Iraq and Iran, in London, in Paris? The schools is halal. I want to ask you something, Mr. Perfect. What war is perfect? What goes perfect? Because you didn't know about all the deaths and the destruction before. You feel better. Now that you know about it, you feel unclean. You don't feel good about yourself because now you know what's going on.
I have a great
think about that, Andy. Andy, you think about all those people that lived under the boot.
Andy, I'm sorry. We got to continue. We got the lines full. We'll be back with you later. Pamela, this is a business, by the way, of the namby-pambiness and the touchy-feeliness. You know, Jim Woolsey said this week, and you had it on your blog, again, www.atlasshrugs.com, that... hey, you know, no, we shouldn't be talking to the Palestinian Authority, and they shouldn't have a state until their government renounces violence and recognizes Israel. What, and the lefties went nuts over this. What part of this, but what part of this is so objectionable?
They love ideas and hate people. There's not one Israeli toe in Gaza. Why don't they shut the, all right, I know I'm on regular breakfast. Why don't they just.
You can say anything except the F word.
They have their own little state there. Why don't they go to work, collect the garbage, go to school, make a life, plant a flower?
Yeah, how come it's never written about, you know, that Israel gave 150,000 semi-automatic weapons to the Palestinian militia? Besides funding them, they armed them.
Well, that's because they're left-hearted in Israel.
No, but I'm talking about the press in America. They never mention that. That's like goes forgotten.
It's not that they never mention it. It's that nobody wants to... Listen, I got a piece up about the Palestinian Christians and how terrorized they are and how their land is being stolen. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. I want to know why there's an Islamic council in the UN. Is there a Christian council? Is there a Catholic council? Is there a Jewish council? I want to know why there is a it's a morally corrupt imbalance, and I want to know why people, where is the light that goes off in their brain? Where is it? The left will never have it. I got to tell you, at the end of the day, it's a very unhappy group. I've come to the stunning conclusion that they're very profoundly sad people, the left. Honest to God, it's the optimists and the pessimists. I think America rocks. I think America is out there doing the dirty work. What do I think we need to do? We got to get the hell out of the UN. How disgusting that is. We need a new world order with freedom-loving countries like the Baltic states, like Australia, like everyone who understands that we are fighting for our way of life. And if Canada, listen, I love your man Harper. So I don't like to come too down on your crazy leftists, and they're crazy up there. But I love that man Harper, so I'm gonna go easy because I want him to stay in office. He's a guy. I vote for him if he ran in my country.
Amen, Sister Pamela. Listen, we got it. We're up against the clock. I think next week we're gonna start it earlier. But I want to give you the last word out of my mouth from your blog. Western civilization, Pamela Geller writes, hangs in the balance. Be part of the solution, the cure. Get your heads out of the sand and fight the great fight. You may think it's not your problem, that it's Israel's problem or the Jews' problem, but Israel and the Jews are, as always, the litmus test for the world's civility and courage. They're the canaries in the coal mine. You, my friends, may surely be next. If you're not part of the solution, you are the problem. Change the world one word at a time, one person at a time. Pamela Geller, Atlas Shrugs, www.atlasshrugs.com. Pamela Geller, we thank you very much. And I just want to close with four lines from Robbie Burns on his birthday of Scotland's national poet, and frankly, the poet of every man. A fig for those by law protected. Liberty's a glorious feast. Courts for cowards were erected. Churches built to please the priest. Thank you to Chris Bunbury in Master Control. That's it for tonight.